Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians that are making their way through life, love, laughter, laundry.
Yes.
Food laundry. That's what I'm calling dishes right now. I'm
calling food laundry.
Yeah. Because your food laundry washing machine is on the fritz, and so that's been a big part of your week, correct?
That is 100% accurate. I know we're supposed to save all this hot juicy stuff for the podcast, but I did have to vent to you for a second because I'm doing all my dishes by hand like a peasant.
Yeah, fun fact, that's how I do my dishes. I've never once had a place that has had a dishwasher. Not that I'm against them. It's just I've never lived in a place that's had one or had a kitchen set up where it made sense to get one.
Okay, so now it just feels like I'm being a diva.
No, I think I'm definitely I'm an outlier. Some would say, a maverick.
Do you?
You know.
Do you also do your laundry by hanging them on a string outside of your house?
Well, no, because it got too much to bring it back from the river wet. So I just put a string up by the banks of the river. So after I wash them in the river and beat them on the rocks, then I just hang them there and then let them dry there at the river, because it's a lot easier to carry them back if they're dry, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to stress out the horse and buggy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the weight. I did have to get my dishwasher fixed. I also last week recorded with no internet. So House Simmons over here is going through a lot of technician stop-ins. I had to take Tony to the vet today. That's our fat chihuahua.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got into something. He's had some gastro issues and he's usually always lethargic, but he was like super lethargic.
Like now, was it because you were using him to clean your plates? You were just putting those dirty plates and let Tony go to town?
That's a life hack. He was in heaven until he wasn't anymore.
He got the itis, basically.
Got the itis. He was not. He did not know when to throw in the towel, and neither did I.
Yeah. So, well, is he going to be okay? At least,
yeah, he's good. We got him. He had to get some shots. Mm-hmm. Insulin shots. They're like, you keep eating like this, we're gonna have to take that back leg now. But they gave him an IV where they just stick a bag in between like his shoulder blades.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and they just load him up with liquids and fluids, and you can like see his. Like you could see the little pouch under his skin raise where they're like pumping in the water. It was gnarly, dude.
I trust that they know what they're doing, but my dogs have ever had like have an ID, like if they put under for some reason, it's always in the arm. They always shave a section of their arm but I also don't get to see it happen. It's all back of house kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But they come back with their arm shaved. But yeah, man, right between the shoulder blades. That's interesting. Yeah,
that was it. So he had to do that, and then he got his. It was a rough day for him. Had a temperature taken, and that's never fun for a pup.
No.
And then he had two other shots. So I was sitting there holding him like a little football, and she was poking him, and he was like, "This is bullshit." And he looked at me like, "I trusted you," and look at where we are now.
Yeah, but I mean, then you delivered him safely back home, and then hopefully he looked at you with appreciation from that.
Yeah.
How many shots? You got three shots or four shots?
Two shots and then the IV.
Okay.
So a total of three pricks.
Yeah, a few less shots than 50. One more prick than this podcast. Anyway.
Yeah.
So I am Matt Alano Martin. I'm one of the Midwest-based comedians. Everything is going okay with my dog. Knock on not even wood. I don't know what this cheap. I have this super cheap table that I use as my office table because it's very skinny. I think it's supposed to be like an entryway of a house or something, like where you just put your keys and stuff on it, because it's basically deep enough just for this my laptop, because the space that I have it in, I can't have a bigger actual desk. So I'm guaranteed this is not actual wood. Whatever I just knocked on, it's knock on chemical composite Hopefully everything's going to stay okay with my dog. With me, yeah, as always, and always just, you know, we always get right to the comedy talk on this podcast. That's what we're known for, is my buddy Dwight Simmons. So Dwight, other than all of the dishwasher and dog drama, how have things been? What have you been up to comedy wise?
It's been great, man. This is where we stray, because it's like I'm on the road and then I got to come home. It's just part of the life of like putting out fires during the week when normal people are going to work. But I didn't have to travel that far this weekend. I was in Columbus, Ohio, which is about 3 hours from where I live, doing Don't Tell shows. So the Columbus Don't Tell shows, he does 4 in a weekend. I've seen him do 5, whereas most of the other Don't Tells around the country are just like one show per week. So it was cool to like, you know, just plop down and hang out all weekend in Columbus. I stayed at the Red Roof Inn Plus.
Got that plus on you, dude.
Got that plus. I had a little suite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and there was glass in my room. There was broken glass. So shout out to the Red Roof.
That's what the suite is. That's what the suite is. Yeah.
I went down and I was like, hey, there's glass on my floor. There's like glass by the desk and like the little TV. Mm-hmm. Where they had swept, but they'd done a terrible job. So I took pictures and I showed the guy at the front desk, and he was just like, all right, we'll send someone up to sweep. And I was like, cool. I was like, all right. And then I left for the shows, 2 shows Friday, came back, still glass, man. What's the recourse?
Do you think they swept again, but they swept around it again?
They intentionally, I don't think they swept at all. I don't think he really did send someone, but
yeah.
I don't know if I was too tired or just, I don't have that gear in me to like go back and go full blown Karen and just like, even though this feels like it would have been justified.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Absolutely horseshit.
Yeah. I don't want to have to wear shoes the entire time I'm in my hotel room.
Yeah, I slept in my socks and my sandals. No, I didn't. But yeah, man, those shows were great.
Okay.
Every Don't Tell show that I've done, I think I've done 6. They've been great. They have a formula that is just, I'm so envious of it as someone who runs shows and has run shows for a long time, that they found this thing that's just bulletproof. Because they're not promoting a headliner. They're not promoting the comedians. They're promoting the concept of going out to a comedy show.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't know that you could do this and be successful.
Well, to a certain extent, some clubs have done that. Some clubs, yes, they'll say whoever, you know, the headliner is. But they really, you know, because you also get that in comedy where couples come, they didn't do any research on who the comedian is, for good or for bad. You know, they just like, oh, comedy's a thing we can go do on a Friday night with our friends, and they don't do any research whatsoever. So I think clubs have, if they've not been marketing themselves that way, which some of them have clearly been, like, you know, the ones who would go after like bachelorette parties and things like that, you know, like kind of make, like, have your next, you know, outing with the fellas here, you know, hit the comedy show before you go to Top Golf, you know, or whatever. But yeah, I think it's not just selling the idea of going out and having a fun, unique experience, which is a big part of the Don't Tell marketing, but it's also the chance of who it might be.
Right.
Like, it's like, it might be somebody super famous.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's in, if it's not in LA, New York, or Chicago, probably not going to be anybody super famous. You might see some people who are comedy famous who have done some shit, you know, like, when I booked mine here in Bloomington, I'm very adamant about only doing ones where there's a headliner that has like a couple of major credits, so that it does seem like a big deal when they come on stage. Even if you've never heard of that person, if I say they've been on Conan 3 times, please welcome to stage your secret headliner, Brad Wenzel, you know?
Yeah.
So I think people are like, oh, okay, you know? So, but you know, there's not everyone does that. There are definitely Don't Tells that are having strong lineups, but strong lineups of, you know,
there's no like,
I think if you put the names on the flyer and their credits on the flyer, you probably wouldn't sell as many tickets. And I should know because I'm one of those headliners. Like if you put, as evidenced by my numbers, sometimes you put my name up there and my little credits, my little Bob and Tom, my little, you know, Hulu or whatever. People are like, we know what this is and we don't want to go.
Yeah.
If they didn't know what it is. And they'd be like, maybe.
I've always thought it'd be funny to like put as seen on the Tonight Show, but like it's just the Tonight Show, and then under in like very small print, submit it 3 times, hadn't heard anything back.
No one reads the things. You should definitely do that. Well, and that's like, you know, you were on an episode of Letterman where you were in the audience of a taping and he talked to you and they showed you on camera because you were wearing your Indiana University shirt. And then you have like a little back and forth with Dave for like a couple seconds. And I mean, there's a lot of comics who would be using that as a credit right now.
Yeah, I wish I had it's the Black Republican thing. It's like, I wish I had the Shameless. But does it really matter? Does, like, back to the don't tell thing, it's like, does it really matter? Like, if you are at a level where people are coming to see you versus like our level where we're headlining, but people are just like coming to the show.
Right.
They're not really going to care what the credits are. I have had people that like do some research. They're like, oh, we looked you up on Instagram and we saw some clips and we decided to come. And then I was like, fuck you for telling me that. That means I have to chop up more clips because it's actually working.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I've had that same thing happen to me. And I remember the last time I headlined the Blue Room Comedy Club in Springfield, Missouri, a couple came up to me and they were upset. They were not upset, but she came up to me and goes, oh, you were so great, but we really wish you would have done blah, blah, blah joke. A joke that I was one of my Instagram clips.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that was on my last record. You know, that's why I'm not doing it. And she's like, oh, but yeah, we just love that joke so much. It would have been fun to hear. Which we don't think about that very often, but it's a real thing that happens. I mean, you know, we've probably talked about it on this podcast before, but you know, like, Gaffigan still has to do Hot Pockets, I think. I wonder if it's finally where he doesn't have to do it, but he would do it as an encore or something or very end because people just want to hear it. Same thing with Ralphie. When I toured with Ralphie, he had signature bits people wanted to hear.
Right.
And he, every once in a blue moon, would do one, you know.
Bert Kreischer, The Machine.
Yeah. Does he still tell The Machine? He can't. He's probably not. He's to a level now that he's not probably still telling The Machine story.
I think he's making like some sort of movie film, so I mean it's still going. I know that he was doing it as an encore for a long time.
Gotcha.
So like but yeah, it is funny to have people look you up. Like I think we say it a lot jokingly but seriously that like no one knows who we are. But if a club puts your name on something, then people will look you up. The don't tell. So Ricky Velez was the headliner. Do you know who that is?
I know the name. I don't know if I've ever come across him, but I know that name.
Yeah, he was just, he just had like an HBO special either coming out or that he put out. So it is that level. And, you know, the guy from Columbus that runs Don't Tell has been flying people out from LA and New York to run these shows.
Yeah.
And then like every other person is like either at our level or just above it. So I, you know, I had 4 15-minute sets and like 1 10-minute set for the light show. And the light show was still like 40 people.
Yeah.
So doing that like short amount of time after coming off of a weekend where I was just headlining all week was, it's nice, but like it's, you're constantly in the back of your head. It's like, oh, I'm running out of time. And after night one, I was like, oh, I just got to slow down a little bit. But
yeah, because you're trying to cram too much in.
Yeah. That light comes quick. It's just like, okay, getting into rhythm. And then there's the light. It's like, damn.
Yeah. But I think there's part of that too, where I think we do naturally, when you are used to doing headlining length sets, or at the bare minimum, a featuring set of around 25 to 30 or so, that you do those 10 to 15 minute spots. Or even a 5-minute spot, which is even more extreme, you know, like at an open mic or something. I think it took me a while because I used to go so fast because I was like, I've got so much I want to tell you, you know, like, and then I just had to like decide like, nope, not, you're not going to do all the jokes. You're going to have to just pick a chunk essentially.
Yep.
And just do that and try to do it as well as you can in the time that you have. Because it does, your rhythm is very, all over the place when you have sets like that, that jump back and forth in time,
right?
You know, because you can't help but think, like, oh, only 15 minutes. Okay. You know,
yeah.
What am I going to do here? So I do think that's interesting. But I mean, do you think it was worth it, though, to do the weekend, even though it was only like 15 minute spots to go out and do those four shows?
Yeah, I got to work on some stuff. I didn't realize that Columbus had two shootings the week before, like the weekend before.
Yeah.
And the first set, I was doing really well, and then I did the 50 Cent joke, and then I do like an act out of 50 Cent getting shot. Is that the second 50 Cent reference on this podcast?
Yeah, we're working
15 minutes in, baby.
This episode is dedicated to our boy Curtis.
Shout out. But then they just kind of tightened up, and I was like, what the hell? And then I was just doing the comedy thing. I told one of the other comics, I was like, yeah, they were fun, but they tightened up a little. I was like, oh yeah, there were two shootings here last week. And I was like, oh, well, that one's out of the set. But I did get to work on some bits a little bit, but it's also the thing where you just want to have really good shows just because the crowd's so good.
Right.
You're doing 15 minutes, you're like, all right, I'm not going to test out the entire thing, but you know, it's also a college campus, so I'm like, it's like a lot of my material is resonating with these younger, more, I'm not going to say liberal leaning, but like open-minded crowds.
Open-minded, and then also, I think college age kids are also going to get a lot more of the references too, because you do have a bunch of like hip hop references in your act, and not a bunch, but a few, you know, and so they're more likely to kind of know if you drop, you know, an Usher. You know, and again, Usher at this point has been around for 20 years or whatever, but
right,
you know, you do the VFW hall in Martinsville and like a subtle Usher reference may not hit. You know?
Why is he talking about Terry at church? He's talking about Usher's for. Oh man.
You talk about that thing of like not realizing when a joke is inappropriate to like the current setting, you know, because again, you didn't know. And I, you know, have a joke that is on Midnight Nachos that I have permanently changed one of the lines in it, but it's about when I was working at the Boys and Girls Club, and I say, you know, I worked there for a year. The original version of the joke, which is in the album, I worked there for over a year, and I'm not bragging. I say I would take a bullet for one of those kids, for some of those kids.
Right? Yeah.
And then the joke part is that some of them, not all of them, because some, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I luckily never did it the time that there was a school shooting, but the school shooting started to get so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first wrote that joke, you would have one every couple of years or so, you know?
Right.
And then it's like, we're having multiple. So then I had to change that line to, I would jump in front of a bus from some of those kids.
Yeah. Yep.
And then it actually then improved the joke in a way too, because then I had to rethink what the next couple taglines were, you know. Right. It's like, not all kids, if we're gonna be honest, not all kids are bus material is a funnier line than not all kids are bullet material.
Bus material
today is just funnier. I mean, but I think it's also just genuinely funnier anyway.
Yeah.
Like the phrase bus material is funnier than bullet material. To me. And so, yeah, it is one of those things that we have to be aware of. And, you know, you have to adapt like that, because even if it's temporarily or permanently, and there's nothing worse than a comic who just refuses to adapt with the times and realizes that, like, you know, if you had a joke that was about, you know, school shootings the border with Mexico, any other thing that has become sort of like a you know, human rights crisis,
right?
You know, in the last couple of years, then, you know, and you saw too, like a lot of people try to have like edgy jokes about old people dying during the pandemic. And it's like, yo, a lot of people lost their grandparents and their parents and people that they genuinely loved from that, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, the kind of being able to read the room at a national level is also sort of important. You got to think about, you know, one of these things. So I think it's I think it sounds like it was a good time, though, even though you had to go shorter on your set times. Definitely was worth it. And this also, you probably had this too. You wanted to do well because you're hoping that Simon, who books those, will maybe think about bringing you back as a headliner. You know, when he can't get like a big name from LA, he knows that you're going to come in and do well.
Yeah.
You know, because again, like we've said several times before on this podcast, the great thing about comedy is you are always auditioning for the job you are currently doing.
Yep.
Like just to come back. Yeah. So,
Well, yeah, I got to, like I said, try out some, I'm working on a bit about my dad getting stabbed when I was younger. So that seemed to do well, kind of just building it slowly, not rushing. Like, I really don't know what it's going to be in the end. So just the getting into it has been interesting, but doing the shorter set made me like turn off that part of my brain where it's like, oh, I have to like set this up perfectly.
Right.
And it was fun to just be like, hey, when I was younger, my dad got stabbed. And then just like build it around that way.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to like have this perfect, succinct way to get in and out of it before I continue the rest of my set without like freaking people out.
Well, I think we get in our own heads about this too much, about like transitions between jokes and like the setup. I mean, yes, you have to give the audience enough information that they know what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
But people know what dads are, they know what stabbings are. It's that you said, you get it in that one sentence. So sometimes when you are forced to just jump in, I had the same thing, you know, like I've been working on the bit about my mom dying as sort of like the new closer, right? And for a long time, I was like, I can't do that in open mic. It's just too much to ask of an open mic audience for me to start. And then I just started doing it in the open mic.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, I did it at the open mic. And my whole sort of goal was to just slam through as many different types of jokes, like different gears as I could in the 5 minutes. So I did like a self-deprecating joke to open. I did like a sex joke, a pretty dirty sex joke. And then I boom went right into my mom dying. And like, and I just did it and it worked. And it kind of, again, the same thing with you. It like, it helps us to realize like, oh, we don't need to completely lead the audience gently by the hand to some of these things. We can just, you know, throw it up and swing at it and it'll be fine.
Right. You don't, you're not always writing for your BA in English. Like, yeah, that is too intense. I did do a spot on Wednesday that I skipped over that I did not try anything new because that crowd in Springfield, Ohio was a chore and a half. That's a set where I was like, man, I wish I was one of the comics doing 15 minutes. It was like a whack-a-mole, man. It was crazy. Yeah. They weren't. So it's another thing where it's like they came to party. And everyone in the room kind of knows each other. It's a pretty small, tight-knit town. So anytime like you try to do any crowd work or make any subtle reference to anything, someone in the room does that thing.
Yeah.
And so now it just becomes everyone's commenting and turning to the side and talking. And at one point, because I have to keep addressing what people are saying, even if it's not to me, they're just talking to each other. And I go, I ask the lady in the back, I was like, what was that? And she goes, damn, you got good ears. I was like, yeah, I can hear everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the room, your voice travels.
But audience members sometimes, it's crazy how they think you're not going to hear it. My favorite is like when they're sitting right up front and they're talking, like, you know, during my taping of my comedy special, you know, for example, or anywhere else. Like, and then they're like, oh, you could hear. Yes, I could hear that. You're like, we're 4 feet away from each other. Like, whatever. Or you're just using drunk voice, which is like an outdoor, you know, loud voice. Yeah. But I mean, you made it through. You did it. Did you have any fun with the whack-a-mole? Because sometimes if I just embrace, that's how it's going to be. Like the last time that was at Wiley's. One of my sets, I just had to do, you know, I did like 55 minutes and only 20 of it was material. The other 35 was just crowd work / crowd management. And I embraced it, I had a blast, actually.
Yeah, it was fun for a second, like certain points, because again, it's embracing it, but like it's already at like an 8.
Yeah.
And like embracing it any further rather than just like having conversations. Because what they want to be the funny person. Like everybody in the room wants to like one up each other.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna get Jack's ass this week because he got my ass last week. Like I did something about I asked the guy if he was married. And he goes, no, this is my side bitch right here. And the room just erupted in laughter. I was like, cool, man, your side bitch. How long has she been your side? So I just kind of got into that.
Yeah.
And I just started asking other people. And so that to me is not my favorite thing in the world. I don't love doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to watch other comics struggle with it. But being the one in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Because I like to like get back into jokes. I like to have a landing.
Mm-hmm.
But if the whole performance, I only did like 35 minutes. It's like a showcase short show headlining set.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if your whole performance is just putting out those fires, how are we going to get them back so that we can land the plane with them all still buckled in their seatbelts? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the trickiest thing. When you can do that, when you can go into the weeds, you know, you're either forced into the weeds by the audience and the way they're acting, mm-hmm. or you go exploring on your own, doing crowd work and get out there. And you know, and I know you're not a big crowd work person. I've been embracing it more and more in the last year or two,
mm-hmm.
where it was a skill set I wanted to kind of develop so that I would get TikTok famous. No, I'm just
hashtag no. crowd work, hashtag yeah. killing them.
But
Steve Hofstetter, the father that we did appreciate until it was too late.
I know shit. Everybody loved to talk shit about Steve Hofstetter doing those crowd work YouTube clips back in the day.
Yep.
And now he was the archetype. That's what everyone on social media is doing. So send that man some apology flowers. Okay.
And some royalties. Come on now.
Yeah. So no, like I feel like in the Wiley shows, like I was able to get everybody back on board because Mm-hmm. It's one of the things where you have to win. Every time there's an interaction with the audience, you got to be the funnier one.
Yeah.
And it's like figuring out a way to do it without shitting on them. And I'll even like, if they are being fun, then like, all right, let's explore this or whatever. What mm-hmm. if they have two people like, you know, that know each other sitting at different tables. But I have been, you know, pretty lucky with being able to get it to a point where I feel like I can land it. Now that doesn't mean I'm ever going to go into like the emotional closure that I maybe thought I was going to work on that weekend,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just like, I will get us out of there. Okay. But maybe end I just the... also have lower expectations, you know,
I'm just going to end with the dick joke. And
yes, of course. That's what you have to do. I mean, unfortunately
it sucks. It just sucks. It's like, especially, you know, you can't turn down every bar show.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's on a weekday and it's close.
Yeah.
Go work out, like see if it was worthwhile. I will say, I do think the show will be better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this was their fourth or fifth show. So I think it's like training the audience because mm-hmm. like some of the audience is like, you know, sorry, it was so rowdy from other half is just like, you want a shot before you drive home for 3 hours? It's like, wow.
Yep. Of course. Wow. Yeah.
We came to party.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think if I did it again, knowing what to expect, I would just not have expectations that I'm going to come and like work on developing material.
Mm-hmm. I think a key thing that we're kind of not saying here that we probably should, because there are like younger comics who listen to this, is, you know, yes, you go do those shows, you get that money, you know, and you develop the skill set to survive it, but you don't want to start writing down to that room. You don't want to like mm-hmm. start having like bits ready to go, or a second part of your act that is really geared towards that, where it's extra dirty or whatever, unless that's, sorry.
That was a solid sneeze.
Yeah, my allergy has been fucking crazy. but as I was saying, you know, like this is a thing that you do see sometimes younger comics do, where they are doing some of those rougher rooms, And as a survival tactic, that they're learning kind of a bad habit early on. They understand if they do, like, maybe are aggressively shitty with the audience, or, you know, they're dirtier than they need to be, not in crowd work, not even within like the context of a joke, of a structured joke, right? Then that becomes habit. And then they start doing that in rooms where they shouldn't be doing that.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, is this what your act is going to be now? Are you going to be, are you writing an act for that worst possible room?
Yeah.
Is that the comic you want to be? Or, which is, the answer should be no to anybody who's listening. That was not a trick question. It would be a very obvious question. The answer should be no to that. The trick is figuring out how to get all the soft skills and performance level of confidence to pull off a more refined, like, good sweet spot comedy attic, comedy on state type of club act in those rooms. I mean, that's one of the things why we always like talk about the brilliance of Stuart Hupp, is because he does this very high-minded shit in the shittiest rooms, you know?
Right.
And so, and he doesn't change it up. He doesn't have a completely second act, you know?
No. Yeah. I think it's important to take your time when you're in that situation. I think a lot of my bad habits with that is just like rush through it, get this over with, and let's move on. But just like take a breath and like let it sit. I do this with a lot of my jokes. I like to build tension, and you do that through silence, and you do that through silence shows that you're still in control of the room, and
definitely
have the confidence to deal with whatever's going on.
But then it's also, that's the frustrating part, is because you're trying to use silence in this, in different ways to build the tension of the joke. And if somebody's like, Terry farts a lot, you know, like, just let you, God, like, you're like,
damn it.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about farting or anybody named Terry, but you just had to get that in. You just had to let, you know.
Yeah. Fucks up your timing. And man, so the people that run this room, so they've like bought a sound system, they have lighting, they blacked out like the windows, you're away. It's a bar show, but you have your own performance space, and they make you really comfortable. So they definitely are building something. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
That's cool, man. Yeah. I don't have much to report. I'm in full blown limestone mode. And so I did go do the open mic on Thursday at the Attic. Just trying to, you know, not completely forget how to do comedy over the next couple of weeks. And I did have a very good conversation with a younger comic who was the last time that they had performed. From what I got, they were like a graduate student or maybe an adjunct professor at IU. They were in that age group, right? Like, they're in their 20s. And the last time that they had performed was during the summer contest last summer, right? Mm-hmm. So it'd been almost a full year since. And they were performing, and we're getting into like, why do you do an open mic? What is an open mic for? Right. And I was talking about, you know, you should be working on new material, but unless you're there just to stay loose, like, there are different, you know, I used to be very militant about it. I used to always be very like hard on myself and other comics that I knew, like, if they went up there and they just did 5 minutes that they knew worked,
right,
like, you're kind of wasting time. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, you already know that works. That's not what an open mic is for. But I have since, in the last couple of years, gotten a better, more nuanced, I think, understanding of it, because sometimes when you are the pro, it is your role to go up there and crush for 5 minutes to get the mic back. Because sometimes open mics, you know, are up and down energy level, how the reaction to the crowd is. Right. If a bunch of new comics or lunatics have gone up and just killed the energy, it kind of is your role to step up there and try to reinflate the room, right? You know, get it back. And then, you know, and I talked about how, you know, I told this kid, I was like, you know, like, I used to always be like, you should always be doing new material. And I was doing one new joke. And for me, it was like, no, I'm here to stay loose and just keep that muscle alive. I still don't think people should go up to their local open mic and do the same 5 minutes for 6 years in a row, which we've seen people do that too. That's definitely like, what are you saying loose for by doing that? You know,
right. You're just here for attention.
Yeah. Like, that validation and feel good when people laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. But also, like, once you start asking like what to get out of an open mic, you should be setting like actual goals for yourself. That means you've made the mindset shift that, all right, I'm going to try to take the next step into being an MC or hosting. maybe I want to get, maybe you want to do well at the open mic, like continuously, because you want to eventually host the open mic.
Right.
So I understand that mindset of like, all right, I'm gonna go up and do well. You know, I'm going to just change out a couple of jokes so that whoever books this knows that I don't just have the same 5 minutes. That's really important. But I think the setting that like next step goal will really help you stay true to whatever it is that you're trying to get out of this open mic. It's not just like, it's not, you won't fall into the trap of like, all right, I'm just here to hang out and kill with the same 5 minutes that I've been doing for the 2 months. Why can't I get into the hosting rotation? It's like, well, you haven't shown anything.
Yeah, exactly. You do have to show growth, not just in consistency, but also in the fact that you are taking chances and writing new material for sure. And you could do it in a smaller, you know, step-by-step way. I will say that I, you know, because when I first started, I had to bring 10 people like everybody else at the open mic. I had to get 10 people to come out to see me. And so the way that I did that was to, I made a promise to my friends that I was asking to come see me. I was like, I will do a new 5 minutes every time you see me. I was like, you're going to hear other comics you've seen before do the same jokes, but I'm going to do 5 brand new minutes. But I then worked that 5 minutes at like Louisville, Indianapolis, Cincinnati. I drove around and did it at all those mics. And then like, premiered it like once it was kind of polished at the Attic open mic, you know, it's like I was treating that Attic open mic like my hometown open mic, like it was like a professional show. I know these work. I'm not trying shit. Like I've already tried this for the last 2 months, you know, or however long it was. It was about every other month that I could get up, get back in the rotation back then. So I think, being mindful of why you're at the open mic and what you're using it for, I think is important. I did work on a new joke and it didn't really work. And I talked through it on stage and got it to be very funny. But it got very funny in a very specific Bloomington way. I basically flipped it into being a little five joke.
Okay.
Which anybody who doesn't live here, we have this big annual bike race called the Little 500, which had just happened. So I was able to pretty naturally, because it was a joke about Mormons riding bicycles, which I thought everyone knew this. I thought that people understood that, like, people in the Mormon that grow up Mormon, they have to go out like on missionary for like a year. And they basically get sent to a city with some other young, like 18-year-old Mormon kid, and they give you 10 speeds to ride around town. That's how you can get around town, right?
You thought it was universal.
I thought most people understood that.
Gotcha.
When you see the young Mormons in town, they're on 10 speeds. They've got their 10 speeds parked somewhere while they're going house to house. So I was trying to make a joke about Mormons and their 10
speeds. Not everybody washes their dishes by hand, Matt, and hangs their clothes by, damn.
Well, that's the thing is like when you do wash your dishes by hand, you're spending more time looking out the kitchen window. You're really taking in what's happening in your neighborhood, you know? And so you're just, I'm just saying you're experiencing life on a deeper level. No, it is one of those things that this is an important thing to think too. Like, you know, like this is very, very specific piece of knowledge that I thought most people knew about, right? And so I just flipped it into a thing about the Mormons having, I was like, oh, you guys didn't know that? You don't know that they all get 10 speeds? And then I was like, and then I just said, oh, yeah, there's like, they actually had a team at Little Five this year. And then that got a laugh.
Yeah.
And then I just ripped on why their team was so bad. Like they kept stopping to talk to people and try to convert them to Mormonism. Like the, you know, the white button up shirts had a lot of drag, you know, they weren't able to get speeds, you know? So I just kind of ripped it. And so it got fine, you know, it got there, but it also was this thing. I'm like, okay, I can't do that joke. That joke's not going to work because it's way too niche and specific. And it was part of like a larger chunk I was doing on religion. I've been writing a lot of stuff about religion.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I still got there and wound up doing a lot more new jokes. Material on stage, but it was out of survival where I'm just like, well, I guess let's just
I'm in it,
tap dance our way to some kind of ending, and it got there. It still worked out, but yeah, so that was my open mic experience. But there is that thing about the things that we know that we assume everyone else knows, and I talk about this when I teach the comedy class. Like I always use the example, like Missy Elliott. I have a you know, one of my older jokes is about a Missy Elliott song, but not everybody knows who Missy Elliott is. If it's an older person, they don't know about Missy. But all I have to say is like, my favorite rapper from the 90s is this woman named Missy Elliott. And, but she has this, and that boom, everybody gets it. They know what rap is. They know, they remember what the 90s was. They get it. That this, I'm talking about a rapper. And then I just, and then the joke, the rest of the joke is about a lyric in one of her songs. You don't have to have ever heard the song because I say what the lyric is. that's such an important thing that a lot of first timers will get up there and they do a joke about some video game they play.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, not everybody's played Stardew Valley or whatever the fuck you're talking about.
This,
you know,
is very specific.
Yeah, exactly. And I picked a pretty popular video game as an example there. But even then, like, you know, like we did a joke about the new Zelda, you know, game, like people like me are like, yes, we're aware there's a Zelda game and some of us may even know there's a new one, but we haven't played it yet. You're doing this joke about something that happens on level 38 without any context.
We would have had to see your video screenshot that you took. This is so specific.
Yeah, but anyway, so that was my entire comedy experience of the weekend. As I did that on Thursday, and then I just been in Limestone World, baby. I went to see a play. I took advantage of being home for the weekend. Denise and I went and saw her friend Maya's husband, Jonathan, had written and was actually also acting in a play that they did here in Bloomington and Bloomington Playwrights Project called On the Line, a play about college football. Do you want to take a guess what it was about?
Rudy.
Nope.
Friday Night Lights.
It was about college football. Friday Night Lights is about high school football, dude. Come on.
Have not seen it.
Yeah. Anyway, no, it was great. It was, they did a great job with it, but it was nice to go out and like just support art, you know, outside of comedy and have a date night with my wife, which was nice. And then Saturday, I do have some hot comedy gossip, by the way.
Yeah, I will. I will commend your theater experience.
Thank you.
Yes, I did that a couple weeks ago. I told you I was home and then I went to the IRC to see Clue. So
that's true. Yes.
Look at us being.
Look at us. We're going to have to start wearing like formal wear on our podcast now. We're so fucking classy.
I was underdressed at the IRC.
I was decently dressed. Were you? Pretty well. This is the thing that I do, and maybe this is an older married man tip I can give you, is I let Denise get dressed first, and I see at how she's dressed, like what level of dressiness is she, and then I go get dressed to match it.
Oh, man, that's so less exciting than just guessing.
No, I'm just like, you set the tone, and even if we're going out for breakfast or whatever, if she gets a little bit more dressed up for breakfast, I'm like, all right, then I'm going to go put on a button-up shirt, because I also don't want it to look like she's my parole officer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to step it up.
Hot goss from the comedy world, local comedian Mark Bookwalter got married. This is the hottest goss ever. On Saturday, had a lovely wedding. And
I wish I had... like actual drops, like an applause button or a woohoo.
Yeah.
Congrats, Mark. That's awesome. I saw you posted some pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great time and it was perfect weather. It was like a kind of like a rustic barn wedding, which is very popular, obviously, in the Midwest. But it was lovely. Everything was a good time. And Mel, his new bride, she has a daughter from a previous relationship who's a 6-year-old named Ileana, who gave one of the speeches during the reception.
Oh, nice.
And had the best wedding speech I've ever. She just killed it.
Oh, really? Like, was it funny?
It was funny and adorable and eloquent. And we were all just like, that's it. Like, that's better than any best man going, I remember Steve and I used to get in trouble every day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, just let a precocious and very intelligent child give the toasts and the speeches at your wedding. Like, they should just hire her out. They should mention her.
Well, you're always auditioning for the job that you already have. That's amazing. I always get so anxious at wedding speeches anyway. And especially if it's like a young person. Like, you just feel the nerves emanating off of them. But this doesn't seem to be the case.
No, she was calm and collected. She killed it. You talk about that one time during my niece's wedding. This has been a couple of years ago. Denise and I happened to be seated next to the parents of the best man.
Mm-hmm.
And he got up there and he was just like cussing left and right. And he did a very inappropriate speech. And we just got to watch the parents just like, oh, God damn it. Which was so entertaining for us.
It is more fun.
Yeah.
Because it's, that's hot gossip right there. It's like, I had two best men, and I just had to remind one that there would be older family in attendance and some deeply religious family in attendance.
Yeah.
So then everyone just talked about fantasy football because that's family friendly, I guess. Okay, I have no other personality if you just listen to my best man speeches.
Well, you know, they just needed to distill. You took away all the fun stuff, so they couldn't talk about, you know, all the wild and crazy things.
Just got white out.
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't know. Like, I had two best men too, and they probably did speeches. Here's a great thing also about being like an older couple who's been married for a minute is like at the reception, we're sitting around and it wasn't assigned seating, but we wound up just sitting with all the other comedy people from Bloomington who are married and their spouses and all the other comedy people who are not married sat at a different table. We just like instinctively knew somehow.
Yeah.
But I was sitting with Shanda Song and her husband and Kristen Lucas and their partner. And someone else was there too, I think. I can't really remember now. It might have just been us. It might have been we were the three couples. And we're talking about, you know, Shanda and Josh had actually gotten married at the exact same venue 8 years prior, blah, blah, blah. And we're talking about like the first dance and stuff. And Denise and I, neither one of us could remember what the song was that we danced to at our first dance.
Really? And
there really is a beautiful thing. You know, you pick the right person when you're like, oh, we're gonna forget the same shit. All right, cool. Love like it. You're not gonna be mad at me because I don't remember. Okay, good. All right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really match her in every aspect. You're like, you're forgetting really, shit? I can also forget shit. So
yeah, I mean, it's gonna be bad when we're old and we both like set our house on fire because neither one of us remembered to turn the stove off. But
dinner was dope though.
That dinner the was last dope. Dinner. Yeah.
Man.
So we do not have any questions of the week. I did have a compliment that was sent in though I lovingly refer to this young man as Gronk, but Carl Sonnefeld did text to say, I do love y'all's podcast because I truly don't know what comedy in the Midwest is like. So he was a Midwest boy who started comedy out east and is still doing it out east. So thank you for the compliment, Carl. I do believe you. You are always and forever saved in my phone as Gronk, though.
Thanks, Carl, for the kind words. I will just call you Carl. Because it feels like, I don't know, Gronk feels like a racial slur against tall white men. So you're just Carl. You're
well,
just
Carl I can say it. Dwight, I can say it, though. Yeah.
We're gonna continue to let that be.
I think you can say it with like a soft K at the end.
Gronk.
Gronk.
Man. So are you so you're full limestone mode for the next 2 weeks?
Yeah.
June 1st through 3rd,
BT Dubs. June 1st through the 3rd, yep. We are officially 10 days out from the 10th annual Limestone Comedy Festival. In case people are wondering, like, I know you're like hardcore into it. I'm surprised that you're doing as many shows as you are because you handle all of our marketing stuff for the podcast, mm-hmm. like sort of the main thing that you do. Obviously, we all kind of overlap and do other things too, but you handle all that for us. And all that shit really ramps up the last 2 weeks too. So I know that you're good about scheduling the posts and all that kind of things and everything, but I mean, you've got to also be pretty busy too right now.
Yeah. There's a lot of cursing involved. there's no secret that I hate using Facebook. I don't even, so I took mental resources away from Twitter and put them into TikTok because there's so many comedians leaving Twitter. Like there are some of our headliners that have just said, screw this platform, and probably rightfully so. And just learning a different platform has been trying, and I don't know what's legal. I got it wasn't a warning, but I shared one of Kelly Collette's dry bar things and didn't appropriately tag dry bar. So they sent me a nice little slap on the wrist and said, they still let me share the clip.
Right.
And it, you know, that boosts how many views it gets, but it's just like every time something small like that happens, which it happens a lot, it's just more and more sweat. And thank God I've already lost my hair, but a lot of cursing. It's busy, but it's a labor of love. It's really, I get to like see slowly all of the features and their bios, and we've got some really, really cool people that I'm really excited, looking forward to meeting and watching do stand up. But there was the Sunday show at Go Bananas 2 weeks ago. I was like, I've made a tremendous mistake. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Tired. Yeah. Maybe that's why I was so pissed off at the Springfield, Ohio show, because I didn't have the bandwidth to deal
maybe,
with.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Where you want to just come in and do your act, and instead you had to pull from the depths of your soul, which had already been drained by TikTok. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, let me go on autopilot, dude. Let me turn.
I used to do the thing where I would do something close, like I would go, you know, headline in Louisville at the Caravan or something like that the week before, or I would do something that was relatively close and easy. But I just, I just learned to kind of block it off and just like, nope, I'm just like, my focus should just be on this.
Yeah.
On my end, I've been doing a ton of layout. Like my eyes are sore all the time from the amount of design work that I'm doing. Cause I had to do, you know, finalize the art poster. I had to finalize, you know, the program, which I'm still in the middle of, you know, all these other materials that have to come together before you have to coordinate all this stuff at the printer and all that kind of stuff. It is like it's like a full-time job. Like for 6 months out of the year, it's kind of like a part-time job.
Yep.
And then for like the last 2 months leading up or so, it like definitely kicks into more of a full-time job and is intense, but good. And I'm like where we're sitting so far as like badge sales. We sold out of BBIIPP badges for the first time in the history of the festival, which is cool. Other things are going well. I just learned today of a pretty big industry person who's coming that I did not even know they were coming. They hadn't reached out about coming. And then they just sort of like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm going to be there. Just be nice to like connect. I'm like, okay, that's very cool. But yeah.
Big news. That's awesome.
Big news. But yeah, but it's all coming together and hopefully people will come to the festival or else it'll be real sad.
Yeah. Year 10 would be like, damn, just us at the Buskirk.
Limestonefest.com. You know, if you haven't bought a badge or a ticket yet, we would love to see you at least a couple of the shows. It's a real good time. Where are you at? Are you working this weekend too?
I am working this
weekend. Oh my God. You're foolhardy. You're brave insane. And foolhardy, my friend. Where are you going to be at this weekend?
It's the thing where you send out your avails and they all come through like the same 8 week period. But I am in Detroit at the Detroit House of Comedy. I am featuring for an array of people all weekend. So normally I would be doing Indy 500 stuff at like the track at least one or two days. I don't think I've been on the road on like Memorial Day for like a long time. So missing out on the track. I will be in Detroit though. I've never played this club. So we'll see what happens. It's newer. It's right downtown.
Yeah.
And so.
Right by the casino.
Right by the casino. I will be in my room scheduling out limestone posts. So.
Well, I will just be at my house working on limestone stuff. That's my entire plan. So I have nothing really to push or promote. If anyone out there does have a question for the podcast, I do think we probably can still do an episode next week. I think I can take time Tuesday to pod again if you can. For those of you that want inside scoop, we do these on Tuesday and then we release them on Wednesday. We'll touch base. But we may or may not have an episode next week as we get closer to limestone if it's getting too crazy. We'll play it by ear. But I would like to hear how the Detroit House of Comedy shows go and all that kind of good stuff. And we can, we can also answer questions. If anyone has a question for the pod, we didn't have one this week, but we'd love to get your feedback and your questions. You can do that by emailing us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. I was going to leave us on a cliffhanger, but I think we'll just talk about it. It's a thing that we talked about the other day, like some personal news of my own, but we'll see how that plays out. That'll be a post limestone thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Just tease that out a little bit. Some big news, potentially big news. Let's put it that way. Some potentially big news. And we'll get into that and how that will affect the podcast too.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say I appreciate everyone that comes up and says kind words, like all the comics that listen. Matt's really good about shouting you out. I am a terrible listener. So I will just group you all in together at one and say thank you for supporting. Please send in questions. Like, I know that I shit on everybody that sends a question, but do it anyway.
Yeah,
I can't change myself. can't change who I am as a person, but we love to hear from you. So please send in those questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I'll go ahead and shout out some of the ones that I think have come up and told you. I mean, shout out to Bert Kreischer for telling you that he loves the podcast and, Eliza Schlesinger. Just Eliza.
The artist formerly known.
Yeah. Yeah. Who else? I'm trying to think who are huge.
Yeah. Joe Rogan said
Kevin Hart.
Keep his name out of our mouths.
Yep. Joe Rogan did that entire episode of his podcast dedicated to our podcast. That was really, really interesting that he did that. But, you know, yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We do appreciate it. This has been a pretty rewarding thing, I got to say. Not that we're wrapping up the podcast. I know it sounds like that. But we're in a reflective state as we move into the 10th year of the festival. And what number episode is this? Is this
26, 27. Yeah.
So we've got a little bit under our belt here, and it's a good time to, you know, look back and reflect. And I know I always have fun in these conversations. And even if we kind of cover the same topic a few times over the episodes, it's important because this stuff comes up over and over and over again. If there's one thing that comedians need, it's to be told the same goddamn thing over and over again.
Repetition, dude.
Like, be a nice person. Don't let jealousy get in your way. You know, do the fundamentals, you know.
Yep.
Don't shit on the audience until they absolutely deserve it. You know, some real basic things. You know,
the 10 commandments of comedy.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week, probably.
Maybe. Look out for Mormons on 10 Speeds.
Hell yeah.